Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. That's 1-800-639-8783. Or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467369.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, all human beings listening to this program. The Woke Bros are back. I'm Michael Brooks with my compadre, Big Waz, Wazni Lambre. Waz, how you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you, brother?
Doing well. And of course, we want to always send our love to the mastermind, Jade Hoy, and the mega producer, Rob Lopez, who keeps us on our toes and guides the ship. On this week's program, we got a lot to hit. I just want to say real quick up top, there's a link in the description to come see us, TMBS, November 23rd at World Cafe in Philadelphia with special guests, Artesia Balthrop of TMBS fame and Waz and Mike friendship fame. Also, Crystal Ball of The Hill and Emma Viglin of The Young Turks. Get your tickets. That's the week before Thanksgiving. I know it's sold out and everybody is regretting that they didn't get to go see the Count of Ding show in San Francisco this weekend. That's going to be beautiful. We'll talk about some more stuff like that in the wrap up, but let's get to the show. And we're going to start by talking about Ellen DeGeneres, George W. Bush taking a selfie, watching a Cowboys game. Waz, is this about people loving each other across boundaries, or is this the ultimate fulfillment of a corrupt, rotted capitalist class in America?
I don't think it's either. Like, it's one of those things. It's a sporting event. They're in a suite. What is Ellen supposed to do there? Is she supposed to storm off in opposition? She's supposed to just coldly look at George Bush and show no human warmth or empathy or, you know, just any humanity whatsoever towards this guy? I think that's a ridiculous ask. But at the same time, Mike, and I'm not trying to play both sides of the fence here. I think there's a point to be mined here from the people who are bitching on Twitter and all over the place or all over the internet, which I think is those people from the Bush regime should not be allowed to go in public in polite company without being ridiculed. They should be getting shunned. Right. Like Matthew Dowd should be getting shunned. Right. Like Dick Cheney, all of those people, they should be getting shunned. George Bush's speechwriters, they should be getting shunned. They should be embarrassed to walk around in public for what they did, like war crimes, Gitmo, you know, the war in Iraq, the trillions of debt that they put on the country, the profiteering that Dick Cheney partook in his perch as, you know, a shareholder or whatever he is over there at Halliburton while he presided over that war orchestra. orchestrated it, started the propaganda machine to get the American people on board to go over there. Like, they should be embarrassed to show their face in public. I do sincerely believe that. But at the same time, like, part of me is just like, Ellen's supposed to like start a protest at a Cowboys game? I don't know, Mike. I just think, what is Ellen really supposed to be doing there? Not being a human being?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny because this really is a hard, look, I definitely went in and I'll work it backwards. Ellen's statement that she put out on her show explaining why she did what she did was, to me, where the grossness came in.
So this weekend, I went to Dallas for the Cowboys game. And during the game, they showed a shot of George and me laughing together. And people were upset. They thought, why is a gay Hollywood liberal sitting next to a conservative Republican president? Didn't even notice I'm holding the brand new iPhone 11. And I was aware that I was going to be surrounded with people from very different views and beliefs. And I'm not talking about politics. I was rooting for the Packers. And get this, everybody in the Cowboys suite was rooting for the Cowboys. And so I had to hide my cheese hat in Porsche's purse. Here's the thing. I'm friends with George Bush. In fact, I'm friends with a lot of people who don't share the same beliefs that I have. We're all different. And I think that we've forgotten that that's okay that we're all different. Just because I don't agree with someone on everything doesn't mean that I'm not going to be friends with them. When I say be kind to one another, I don't mean only the people that think the same way that you do. I mean, be kind to everyone. Doesn't matter.
Because to be honest with you, just the idea that you're going to describe the invasion of Iraq, the bombing of Afghanistan, being a torturer as just a difference of opinion, you know, like, oh, I hang around people who wear fur. By the way, like, I think wearing fur is kind of fucked up. So I'm not even like cool. You know what I mean? That's a fine point. But you cannot compare that to literally causing the death of millions of people. And so, and I also think it's funny too. I covered this on my show, but I will say that back in 2007, Ellen scabbed her writing staff and betrayed the writers' union. So maybe George W. Bush are closer than we might think. Mm. But I do think that beyond that, like, the real problem that I have is it, and I'm trying to figure this out. And part of the reason I focus so much on this is honestly like my own humility, my own mistakes, my own, you know, evolving thought process. And I make a point a lot about how, on the one hand, you know, we're in these political brawls. And obviously, I think these brawls, whether it's Trump or Sanders or whatever, I think these things are existential. And I'm not interested in, like, you know, the fake civility conversation. And then on the other hand, particularly with the proliferation of online culture and all the shit, I think that it's actually really disgusting and really terrible that people don't see complexity in their fellow humans. They don't think about building bridges, which is bullshit when applied to a lot of political situations, but very important for our culture and civic space to the extent that it's possible. So what I didn't like, to be honest, was I felt like Ellen made some good points in the service of her basically saying, shut the fuck up and let the 1% party together. Not we got to do something deep to actually, you know, do something in this country. So I doubly resented it because I actually, you know, wait, some of the things she said, I don't, like, unlike a lot of my brethren in this kind of space, I don't recoil at. Like, I think it's true. But I think if your example of that is, so let me take a selfie with a war criminal, that's not helping the case.
Yeah. Part of me doesn't understand what the solution is supposed to be here. And I shouldn't even say that. That's the wrong way to put it. There's a certain themes that we tend to repeat over and over on the show. And one of them is we need to stop making these celebrities into demigods in the first place. Like, I don't know what makes Helen qualified to be taking a stance against George W. Bush in a way that actually matters to millions of people. Right. Besides that, she's a public lesbian, like, and she became one at a time where it wasn't normal, I guess, for people to do that? Like, what are her qualifications, you know, for this? I don't know what Ellen's role in the quote unquote struggle is, right? And at the same time, this was kind of random. Like, it's not like Kanye West. Actually, you can't even say that for Kanye West. It's kind of when the president summons you, you kind of got to go. Right. Like, it's even different than Kanye going to the White House. It's not even Jay-Z and Roger Goodell, which is explicitly just straight up. Hov went out of his way to do a business deal with this guy, which is like, yes, he got raked over the coals for greed. And, you know, some people call him a race trader for it, which I think might be a little bit far, but not that far. I just don't even. With Ellen, I not a gay person, so I don't rate Ellen. You understand what I'm saying? Like, I don't. She, when I think of celebrities and activism and people who matter in that space, Ellen doesn't never would ever come to mind as somebody that stands for shit for people who, you know, are the most marginalized and disenfranchised in the country. Like, she's not, you know. And you could say that I'm giving Ellen a pass. I can't feign outrage at Ellen DeGeneres, man. It's hard for me to understand why or how I could do that. But at the same time,
yeah, I hear you.
No, and again, just to reiterate, at the same time, a lot of these people, man, you know, Hugh Hewitt, like, why does this guy get to come on TV? Like, he was part of the machine that started the Iraq War. Like, a lot of these people shouldn't be allowed to be, you know, come around polite company and get love or praise or anything. Like, it's a lot of these homies that shouldn't get that courtesy, and they do. George Bush happens to be somebody who's even more responsible than those people. So, you know, again, man, I don't have a lot of thoughts on this besides the fact that, yeah, George Bush should be shunned in public and polite company.
I think, you know, honestly, I'm going to say, like, look, I think there is – like, I did a segment on it on my show. I think there is something worth talking about there. This is probably something, though, that depending on who I'm talking to, I'll break either way. Because, you know, I agree with you on some level, like, you know, whatever. Like, they took a photo to, you know, sure, they're watching the game. Like, there's some real basic level in which that really sucks. I'm not going to lie, but it's also like, you know, whatever. On the other hand, when I see other people's timelines saying like, oh my God, I disagreed with him, but I wish he was president, or, you know, this is America, this is the fulfillment of anti-Trumpism. And by the way, all the people who tweet just like brain dead, crazy nonsense like that are always people that hate Bernie Sanders, that don't want to, you know, really address anything in this country, whether it's...
Wait, hold on. If you hate Bernie Sanders in that respect, who do you like then? As far as the presidential campaign is concerned.
Oh, I think honestly, I mean, you could like anybody from Kamala Harris to Elizabeth Warren. Like, I'm not even talking policy-wise. It's just very
clear. You can't like Kamala Harris if nah, you can't. Yeah, no, I'm not saying they don't exist, Mike. I'm just saying, like, logically, that doesn't hold up.
It isn't logical. It's awesome. But I mean, I'm saying the same way that some people, and I think, you know, rightly, even if it isn't the big deal in the world, they symbolically see 2 1-percenters, one war criminal, one schlocky comic, and they hate the symbolism of that. There's other people who they just like the symbolism of that, right? And there's no depth to anything in their politics. Like, you have a contingent of people who, and I support impeaching Trump. I think Trump is an existential threat. I am all about destroying that guy politically, as much as I think he's funny and as much as I think the Democrats utterly suck. I don't downgrade how despicable he is for a second. But there is a contingent in this country, and it is the hashtag resistance, that literally is like, you know, they're ready to fucking... Forget even George W. Bush and the CIA and whoever else. They're ready to bring people who were hanging out with Trump 4 weeks ago into the fold, as long as they say something bad about Trump. And it's a terrible politics. Literally, all they have is they hate Trump. They don't care about any policy. They don't care about any history. It's just an emotional reaction they have to Trump. And it's actually, in addition to being stupid and embarrassing, it's dangerous. And I think, you know, those were the people that really responded well to that photo. And that impulse, I think, does need to be pushed back on. I hated that Ellen said legitimate shit in the service of her excusing her own, you know, her, in a self-serving way, I should say. And then, you know, yeah, on another level, like, look, I've heard those stories. You know, I've heard this great comedian, I forget his name, you know, like he had an opportunity to meet Henry Kissinger. He's like, I don't shake hands with war criminals. I respect that too, frankly. But, you know, I don't expect Ellen to do that. But if she's going to, on top of that, give kind of a self-serving statement, I think we can talk about it.
Yeah, for sure. And it's a discussion that needs to be had. And again, part of me is like the holding people to account and Ellen having to explain this publicly is a win, ultimately, right, in my opinion. But whether we liked her explanation or not, I think it's something, and it puts other celebrities on notice, right? Not even on notice, but it's something people have to think about. It's like, damn, they made Ellen really had to come out and talk about just going to a football game and, you know, scarfing hot dogs down next to the ex-president. Like, damn, I gotta issue a statement just for doing that shit in public now. I like that personally. I like the accountability that entails. So, you know, I've never been an online zealot, blah, blah, blah. I don't understand the life of that type of person. I've never been a cancel, blah, blah, blah. I never even tell people don't, like, for instance, Kanye West, who I'm like, this dude is cooked. He's finished. I have no problem stating my own opinions about Kanye. But I'm not going to go on the internet and say, oh, you're an asshole for still listening to the you're such a fucking hoe. I love it. You're a jerk for liking that song. It's like, I mean, if you enjoy that's cool. I'm going to continue to say how I feel and try to make persuasive arguments in favor of how I feel. But I can't be mad that people still going to watch Ellen. Like, I don't know. Let's get over ourselves, libtards.
I agree. Well, I think that's the other thing. Like, the last thing I'll say about it is, like, I just also think, like, in general, you can make criticism. You can do, you know, if it's useful. And sometimes it definitely isn't. I mean, there's obviously just a culture of repetition and reactivity, which is pretty toxic and unthinking. But then it's also like, yeah, I mean, you can't. I mean, the middle position is like, you don't demand that people stop watching people and all of this crap. Like, I think, you know, if anything, we need to completely reverse course on that and think much more critically in that direction. So I'm not, yeah, I totally agree with you. And it's funny because outside of the online ecosystem, it's really funny when you have those, like, even around Kanye, like, you can have conversations where universally everybody is like, what the fuck is wrong with this guy? But if somebody comes on too hard, somebody else is going to be like, oh, God, you're not one of those people telling me to not listen to his music anymore. Please tell me you're not that guy.
Right. No, you know, and by the way, like, I think Kanye is a dub and I still listen to his music. I just don't, you know.
Yeah, of course. And I think that's also the other product, frankly, of people not having any actual power over politics, so only having the symbolic power, you know, to basically harass individual people versus changing structures. And I think that's another big problem. But let's talk about China a little bit. There's, you know, basically to really not to get into too much detail, and I want to recommend here that people check out the latest Basketball Buzz episode that actually just dropped today as we're recording this on Wednesday.
And people, it's in front of the paywall too, Mike, so you got no excuses, y'all.
No excuses whatsoever, friends, brothers and sisters and comrades, to not listen to that great show. So there's been a variety of basically altercations from the world of NBA to the world of online gaming, of basically people making a statement on Hong Kong. I've talked about Hong Kong on my show. I don't even think, unless Waz has something he needs to add to it, I'm not even, you know, if you want
my opinion. No, we did Hong Kong already. We good.
Okay, yeah. If you want, then go into the archives or whatever. That's cool. This is about, really, to me, I mean, there's obviously a much more complicated geopolitics to it. In some ways, I think China is just politely asking to get the same treatment that Israel gets, which is no criticism, no discussion, no analysis ever. They're just like, we would just politely like the Israel apartheid treatment. Thank you. But beyond that, to me, setting everything, well, you can't set everything aside, but in some ways, it really is just a question of corporate censorship. And that's a problem, period. Really, whether you're talking about China, Israel, or the Vatican, or, you know, General Motors.
Yeah, the NBA, and you know, we don't need to get too deep in the weeds with the NBA, but ultimately they tried this to cut the baby in half, right? Which is like, yo, we respect China's position. We don't want to hurt people's feelings, but at the same time, we can't police, which I'm assuming they're going to try to do behind the scenes, because, right. And I think the lesson of this, Mike, is capitalism, as always, right? Like, it just shows you, like, when money is the only object, you find yourselves in these pickles. Once you get into business with the NBA, with China at all, you're compromised moralistically if you're talking about freedom and human rights and civil liberties and this that and the third and American exceptionalism and we the most freedom loving people and capital. You know what this does, man? It just exposes the entire lie that capitalists like to tell us, especially here in this country, that capitalism is inextricably tied to freedom, democracy, human rights, and all of that stuff. Like, that's what capitalists like to tell. That's the story they like to tell themselves about themselves and tell us about themselves. When in reality, it's like, you don't actually care about any of those other things when they get in the way of making money. And that's always been the case. You can look at the history of labor unions, all those rights that were fought for. The capitalists didn't just readily be like, hey man, we're gonna do 40-hour work days, 5-day weeks. You understand what I'm saying? Paid vacation, health care, you know, like no child labor. They didn't voluntarily give this shit to the American workforce. Don't tell me capitalism is inextricably tied to human rights and democracy and civil liberties. It's bullshit. You know, but the NBA, even though they are first and foremost a capitalistic entity, they fancy themselves as somebody who cares about human rights, somebody who cares about what happens to subjugated people. And that's by proxy of the things that their players have come out and been against. And Mike, you know, again, the NBA is just one example of this. We don't need to use the NBA. It could be anybody. Of course, Nike likes equality t-shirts because they know it doesn't ultimately hurt money. Of course, the NBA is behind, you know, LeBron wearing a Trayvon Martin hoodie, or, you know, certain people talking about police brutality, or talking against Trump. Like, they know their constituency. The NBA fan tends to be a more democratic leaning person as far as party affiliation, tend to be more socially liberal, tend to be more. They know all these things about their audience. So it's like, of course, we're going to get all of the benefits of being in close proximity to the players and the statements that they make, while also knowing it doesn't ultimately hurt our bottom line. Now, when, you know, they got to literally, Mike, put their money where their mouth is, they back down every time. That's what the capitalist is going to do. I just find it interesting that China just feels so unlimbered and just unencumbered. And they just feel the liberty to punch the NBA around because they're like, you guys are capitalistic whores and you'll do anything for money. And we're going to slap you around right now.
Yeah, not definitely.
That horse should be slapped around. I don't want that message to get out there, but you know what I'm saying, Mike.
I mean, I don't think that the People's Republic of China's leadership are as enlightened as you or I was. But I think that, you know, beyond that, yeah, I mean, it's also, to me, it's so revealing, like the whole conversation of what the relationship with China is and understanding China in a way that doesn't demonize or excuse it for, you know, I mean, this is obviously one of the most complicated places on earth with so many contradictions, so many problems, so many abuses, and also some very real accomplishments, not to mention, you know, how the same descriptions fit the United States so perfectly. But I just, the last thing I want to say, I mean, everything you said about the true nature of capitalism and how this works, obviously you're 100% right, 1,000,000% right. And I, you know, there was this clip recently from Michael Bloomberg basically saying, like, you know, Xi Jinping isn't a dictator because, you know, you can't last if your people don't like you, basically. And what was interesting to me is, like, you know, actually on one hand, it's actually true. I think, like,
to a certain extent, even in China, yeah, it is.
China is like a, it's certainly not like a, I mean, he's brought a lot of power around himself, but it's not like a one man show by any stretch. However, Michael Bloomberg was really actively missing obvious points that, of course, there are limits in China, obviously. And, you know, what's interesting to me is I'm sure, I have no doubt, my guess would be, and I think it's obvious that Michael Bloomberg's, you know, business interests are dictating what he's saying. But the power shift, because all these same people 10 years ago, these types of people were the ones saying, oh, you know, you do enough trade with China, you get things moving in the economy, and then all of a sudden there'll be cell phones and people will be free and all of this stuff. And of course, that isn't true. Capitalism is totally compatible with authoritarianism everywhere in the world.
Always.
And also, always. I mean, we see this. I mean, that's one of the greatest, most amazing propaganda efforts of capitalists, to pretend that that goes along with freedom. And now, as we see it, you know, play out, the bullshit is gone. And the truth is like, yeah, China can throw its weight at the NBA because, you know, China has bank. It has power. It has nothing to do with people's feelings. And even something like, you know, look, I don't romanticize. I understand there was people maybe romanticized Tibet or whatever. But the reality is that Tibet is occupied. Tibet has been ethnically cleansed. It's been environmentally abused. These things have all happened. It's the truth.
Yeah, and we haven't even covered the Uyghurs on this show, which is another just horrific.
Horrific. And you know, that's the type of stuff that even, again, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s, it was like fashionable pop culture to talk about the Dalai Lama. You couldn't do that today because of the business arrangements. And that, to me, honestly, like, I don't hold China responsible for that. I hold capitalism responsible for that.
100%. And, you know, another point that I want to make that I think is important, and I tried to touch on this point on the basketball buds. There's this idea of, well, how could the NBA get in business with these guys? Here's the thing, too. When they go to negotiate these deals with the Chinese people and they make, you know, they say, look, man, we love this deal, this idea. You know, our people back home are going to be concerned, or we're concerned, or let's just say, let's pie in the sky say we're concerned about human rights and a surveillance state and all of that. Like, I mean, if you're a Chinese government official, it's just like, have you ever heard of Gitmo? Did you not read the Snowden leaks? Have you ever heard of the black sites all over the Middle East? If you want to talk about election meddling, meddling in democracy, have you ever heard of the CIA? Have you ever heard of America? Right. There's these things that we like to tell ourselves about America that just aren't really true. Obviously, we don't live under the same conditions that the average Chinese citizen does. And, you know, we can thank Allah, Yahweh, God, or whoever you want for that. Rihanna, whatever. You know, we can thank whoever we want for that. But the reality is, like, globally, We don't no longer hold the moral high ground here. We can't go tell China and Russia that we are so morally superior to them. Just think about what we've done in the Middle East. We just barged in there, kicked Saddam Hussein out, who was a horrible guy, but left that place a much more horrible place than it was before we got there. And we went there with no cause. We went there for greedy ends. Right. You can look at who we partner with abroad. And I mentioned the Saudis, and it's not just them, even Israel and the occupation in the West Bank. Like, it can go on and on and on. Even, you know, what Trump is, he's playing footsie with Erdogan now. Like, it goes on and on and on and on and on and on. So when people say, well, how could the capitalists go in there and be cool with China? They're cool with all kinds of shit.
And they always happen. And I'll just say real quick, not only do we not have the authority. Well, I think, I don't know if China still does this, but it's really funny that when the State Department would release its, like, you know, reports on China's human rights, which, of course, again, you know, don't be delusional. Like, of course, there's a ton of human rights violations in China. The Chinese government, at least several years ago, when I was like keeping track of this sort of thing, they would release their own reports on the prison industrial complex and racism. Policing,
yep.
And they would just come right back at us, and it was like, "Yep, that's 100% true." So
we don't have a leg to stand on. Is what I'm saying? Like, of course, and again, as a capitalist, it's easy to justify working with the Chinese when you consider the American government. You know, I'm not saying it's right. I'm saying it's something that it's things that people should think about in the back of their minds. And, you know, of course, I happen to be an NBA fanatic. I happen to, you know, sort of pay my bills by being attached to the NBA, right? Like, I work around the NBA. So it's kind of self-serving for me to make excuses for the NBA and their actions. I get that. But I'm just saying it's something to think about.
Absolutely. 100%. And now we got to get to the world of television and the complexity of intergroup relations.
Yep.
We're talking about, I'll just set it up and I'm going to throw it to you, Waz. So there's a show on, what network is this show on? I'm trying to
CBS.
CBS is a new show called
America's Whitest Network, by the way.
America's whitest and oldest network. Bob Hart's Abishola. It's a new show. It stars Chuck Lorre, who I be honest, I don't know his work, but apparently, you know, it's kind of a comedy that's supposed to kind of represent a sort of Midwest sensibility, this type of thing. He plays a middle-aged white dude.
Wait, hold on. Mike, Chuck Lorre is the show creator.
Oh, my bad. Chuck Lorre also made Big Bang Theory and Dharma and Craig. Okay, all right. My bad. I know who that is. Okay. The protagonist, the main guy in the show is
Billy Gardell. Yeah.
And anyways, basically, he gets taken to the hospital. He wakes up. He sees a pretty Nigerian nurse and he is smitten, and we are off to the races, I guess literally and figuratively. One review actually said, and this is right where I'm going to throw to you, Waz, that actually from a perspective of a sort of immigrant and Nigerian American juxtaposition, the show actually does a pretty good job. It doesn't go to, you know, the sort of like the scene in Trading Places with Eddie Murphy and Dan Aykroyd, if people know the reference. But there's a lot more coming out of the show as well.
Yeah, and I do want to say, first of all, that the show is also co-created by British comedian Yashir, who is of Nigerian descent. So when you see a lot of the authenticity around some of the Nigerian culture within the show, You kind of get an idea why this woman is a comedian. She's, you know, she comes from two Nigerian parents. Those cultural affectations are, you know, very accentuated and acute and actually spot on in a lot of ways. Why I thought it was interesting was because, and Rob brought this to our attention, is, okay, before I even go to the petition, that the online petition that's being circulated by a group called the ADOS, African Descendants of Slaves, when I first saw the sort of billboard for this show, I was like, oh man, this it's gonna be hard for them to stick this landing, right? Just the idea of, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just like the odds of CBS, a network television station, pulling this off, like, it's hard. I'm like, man, coming from an immigrant background like I am, me being a first generation Haitian American the way I am, I'm like, ooh, that's gonna be tough. And you know, so then Rob brings this petition to our attention, and the ADOS is basically coming at it from the position of what I and people of my generation call black Americans, which are black people whose parents were born in America for generations, right? Basically, the first slaves, they're the descendants of the very first slaves that came to America, what we commonly call black Americans, specifically in the diaspora community. And I say that, Mike, because a lot of people who aren't as cultured as, say, you, Mike, even living in New York City, when they think of black Americans, they think of anybody who's black and is American. You understand? Even myself would fall under that description.
I've done this routine with you, right? But it's like you get out of New York City, and there's like, maybe some people will have like an understanding that like Bob Marley is not the same thing as Danny Glover.
Right. Do they?
And I'm not even trying to be like an asshole. I'm just like, it's just the truth. I mean, you know.
So anyway, the ADOS brings up this petition because they're contending that the problem with this show is that it's in the lineage of a black West African immigrants from the diaspora, all of the West African countries, and plus black immigrants from the Caribbean islands like Haiti and Barbados, Jamaica, Trinidad, you name it, have traditionally been used as a class of people to bludgeon black Americans with, and also reinforce negative racial stereotypes, right? You think about stuff like traditionally, like places in the workplace, Haitian immigrants, Jamaican immigrants, Nigerian people from Ghana, those immigrants would come in and they would do the jobs that black people were doing for less money, for more hours, for worse working conditions, right? And then the white man would turn around and be like, see, that's because the black American man is lazy. He has no, he's not grateful for what he has here in this country, and this, that, and the third. And they're actually legitimately, Mike, is a longstanding history of this happening in America where, you know, the West African immigrant is pitted as the model black person in this country, right, contrasting with, you know, the African American descendant of slave person who is not that. He's lazy. He's not grateful for what he has here in this country, and he doesn't want it as bad. These things are real. So I just thought it was interesting. Not that I honestly care whether this show happens or not. I think it is true that there's never been a show on TV that confronts the black Americans sort of perspective in dealing with this, right? Where like these people are black people as well, and they are descendants of European slaves as well, but the gulf in culture and communication, the barriers, can seem so large at the same time, which is just something that's not ever expressed in culture a lot. And I do want to say, and I do want to point out one of the lines from the show, and we could discuss why this line of dialogue is so interesting, because, you know, of course, Mike, you're going to get it, but I think our listeners will understand why this is interesting too. And this is lifted straight from the Hollywood Reporter, and the Hollywood Reporter goes, in one eye-opening lunchtime scene the main character and her friend discuss the prospects of this Nigerian immigrant woman dating a white person. And they talk about sort of the totem pole of potential dating mates. And the character Kemi says this, quote, top of the list, Nigerian man, same tribe, Yoruba. Then Nigerian man, different tribe, Igbo. Then another African, except for Tunisians and Egyptians, obviously. Then Caribbean, then white, then African American. End quote. Which, the reason why that's funny to me, Mike, because it rings true.
Right.
In things that I've heard from the people, the generation above me, meaning my parents, the people who my immigrant family members and ancestors who came here to America, and their interactions with Black Americans was not always the greatest of interactions. And there was just a sort of sense that these people are nothing like us, right? Amongst those people. And, you know, and I have Black American friends. Like, I have a homie who's from Brooklyn, New York, which is, you know, I think the only city outside of Brooklyn, Queens, and the Bronx that even confronts this in any sort of real way is probably Toronto in Canada, where it's like so many people from the diaspora in one location, where in New York, you're going to have all types of people from the Caribbean. You're going to have all of these people from West Africa, and you're going to have Black Americans, right? Like African Americans, all interacting with each other in this one space. And that line is so interesting to me because that it rings true to what you hear from older people. This idea that Black Americans are other, this idea that their culture is worse. They don't have any culture. They don't have no pride. Their culture was stolen from them. Their culture is not true and richly African like ours is, and this, that, and the third. These crazy things that you hear, but you never actually confront in mainstream culture, right? And, you know, for somebody like me growing up, growing up in Brooklyn and Queens, like I said, I had friends from everywhere, Nigeria, Ghana, Trinidad, Jamaica, Guyana, you name it, right? And I did have friends, what we call Yankees, or what we call, or sometimes we would derisively call regular Blacks. you know, I had friends who were quote unquote regular Blacks too, right? This line just speaks to that, just this idea that the other people from the diaspora, you know, routinely, man, had terrible, quite frankly, racist things to say about Black American people. And by the way, but I will say this, my homie, he told me, like, he was a Black American. He told me his dad used to refer to Caribbean people and people, Black people from West Africa as coconuts. Yeah. He was like, I don't fuck with them coconuts.
Right.
Why don't you go get a spear chucker? so you see the like, it's that, you know, it's
like Daryl and Coming to America.
Exactly. Like, exactly.
Lions, tigers and shit. like, yeah, I don't like sports that you can't use your hands with. But like, I think to me, like, I don't know, a couple of things come to mind, right? Like, one, I don't even want to like belabor this and like go for points here or whatever, but like, it truly fucking astounds me that, like, across the board, the claim that there is no like Black American culture is wild. Like, I feel like you can say that as like a, you know, being, and you should be fucking multicultural, you should be progressive, like, absolutely, but that's also like you're denying something which generates billions of dollars. Like, you've ever been in any type of even remote space, and I always say, like, I was never at the center of it, but I was around a little, you know, I had some time kind of in like the orbit of marketing and brands, and, you know, being in some of those meetings and having some of those conversations, even at, and not, and again, I keep emphasizing, not at a high level or anything, right? Like some punditry, a little bit of freelancing. the fucking thirst that all of the most dynamic brands, right? And I mean, I guess it, to me, it's just, I mean, I'm not even going to belabor the point, but it really does shock me. And then even more broadly outside of those points, like just even the fact that literature and so many areas, like, you know, and again, it's not one and the same and not everything is foldable, but like it's elemental to American culture. Like I'm repeating myself. That blows my fucking mind as a claim because that's,
you know what, Mike, you know what? I'm glad you brought that up though.
That's a 3 + 3 = 6 thing. Like what I'm trying to say is like, let me be even more profound. Somebody could say, I fucking hate all of it. I hate James Baldwin. I hate Richard Wright. I hate, the labor union movement, the Pullman Porters. I hate hip hop. I hate jazz. I hate blues. I hate, you know, different schools of architecture. I hate science fiction writing. I hate sports. Like, I'm just trying to I hate all of it, but it doesn't exist. Like what?
So here's the problem, right, Mike? It's just a lack of knowledge, and also it's a lack of education and knowledge on the contributions of Black people to basically everything American. Like the Black people's contribution to this country is foundational. It's undeniable. You can't extract Black people from anything American. But there's this idea when you come from a foreign country, you can see the things that we now take for granted as being American, which they are, not understanding that they have their roots in Black culture, right? Like you can come here from Nigeria and not understand that KFC, for whatever you think about it, that's Black culture being like being made into a commodity and into a fast food chain, right? Like and that being food, you know, and that's not to mention jazz music or hip hop or what, or even country. And also it ignores the problem with that type of thinking. And I think from a lot of the people from the diaspora, man, when they think about Black Americans, I think they don't understand that even the things that Black people started and created here in America, they have all of their roots from West Africa anyway. It's all in language and working in concert with each other. I was watching Ken Burns's country documentary, and he was talking about, yo, the banjo came from Africa. Like that instrument that's so instrumental to country music is an African instrument. It came over here on the slave ships, right? A lot of the first big country songs came out of the Black church and their style of singing. All of these things are tied together and are working in concert with one another. I think that's what ends up happening with the diaspora. A lot of the racist
point, right? Like that. Yeah. Cause my understanding is that the latest scholarship, there was that everything was broken and destroyed theory. And that's been totally discredited and was supplanted by anthropology, history. Like you're talking unbroken chains of religious ideas, political formation, medicine, music, and you know, I mean, yeah, it's just crazy. And anyway, the other things though that I wanted to throw like on a more prosaic level, it's like, okay, I understand, like, very clearly, like, that's always been a cudgel against African Americans is, oh, look at the immigrants, right? They're doing great. And if you look at the Tiger Lady book, she wrote about, like, the four ethnicities that are, like, best at accomplishment, and Nigerians are there. It's like, I don't remember, I think it's Nigerians, maybe Japanese, or, you know, so one group from Asia, and I don't remember the other two. So that all makes sense. And then you have that reflected in a TV show. But my kind of thing now is like every time I, you know, it's like you said in the beginning, like, it is that line in that joke an attack on African Americans, or is it we're writing a show about these characters and this is what they say? I mean, if you have ever been around, I mean, you just even want to like expand it, you know, like certain, like the Sikh community, right? I mean, that's something I won't get into, but I had experience around. Or the, you know, certainly the Jewish community, but even Lily White, like, would make no, you know, I mean, my God, I was just in Northern Ireland. I mean, are you kidding me? People murdered each other, real, like paramilitary shit in a small area over how you relate to the Pope. I mean, obviously it was more complicated than that, but I'm just saying, like, yes, it has a special pop and a special resonance, of course, because of the history and the divisions and the specific terrorism of Black Americans in America. But when I hear a line like that, and I, granted, I have my blinders and my privilege, no question, but that doesn't read to me as a diss. That reads to me as we're trying to write what these characters would say.
Yeah, and again, this show is written from the perspective of a person who's Nigerian, right? Like, maybe this show is good enough that they're going to have, you know, some representation for the Black American on this show. What I would just encourage anybody, like, if you of the diaspora and you have a low opinion of Black American people, I think you need to check yourself. Also, you need to most importantly, you need to check yourself, because when that police officer pull you over and he got his foot on your neck, he's not asking you, wait, are you Nigerian or Ghanaian?
Really? You've never been terrorized by a police officer who said, oh, whoa, whoa, whoa. Oh, this guy's from fucking Haiti. My bad.
Yeah, I thought he was Trinidadian. Like, it doesn't work like that, bro. Like, you know, these people aren't going to make these distinctions that you're doing. So this idea that you want to otherize yourself and separate yourself rather than, you know, celebrate our collective accomplishments as oppressed people on this fucking planet for hundreds of years, I think is a mistake and is really stupid. So, you know, that's all I'll say for that. I encourage everybody to read the Hollywood Reporter's review of this show. I think I'm going to end up watching it just to see what it is they're trying to do and express on the show. To me, it's like, you know, it's CBS trying to get their own Black-ish, fresh off the boat type of thing going off of the ground. So I'm going to check it out and see what they're talking about.
That sounds right to me. I mean, and I think, you know, obviously, I would just, I mean, look, if they totally fuck it up, then it'll fail and people will go at it. And at the same time, you know, I think as a generic statement, if you told me that CBS is the most conservative state network, was going to center a story, right, at least in, you know, in real part on the perspective of a Nigerian nurse,
that's crazy.
I would have said, wow, that sounds like some positive movement to me, you know. So, I mean, yeah, but we'll see how it all plays out. All right, let's get to the crates. Wise, what are you watching? What are you reading? What are you thinking about? What are you going to tell the people to consume?
Shit, man. I got two things. Rihanna just did another profile for Vogue magazine. She basically calls Jay-Z a sellout. Not so many words.
She's
fantastic. Man. She is fantastic. She's just fantastic.
Wow, man.
She was like, why? Who benefits from that? Like, who am I serving? But who's going to win from that? Nobody, none of my people. And, I don't know. I would encourage you to read the entire profile. It's not too long, and it's a Rihanna profile, so it's still going to be illuminating. I just think it was dope. She continues to be probably easily my favorite public person. She might be my favorite public person of all time, of my lifetime anyway. That's if you don't include like public intellectuals and shit like that. But like, as far as a celebrity and a plain old celebrity, not somebody who's like a scholar like Cornel West or something like that. Like, she's my favorite celebrity of all time. And of course, we got that connection from being from the Caribbean. But that's neither here nor there, Mike. I like, you like that tie-in from our last conversation.
Yeah, I was going to say it actually sounds like it's very there. But I just want to say, too, like two things. I mean, Rihanna recently honored Mia Motley, who's the first woman prime minister of Barbados. I played Mia Motley's clip calling out U.S. behavior and regime change efforts in Venezuela that she did at the UN General Assembly. And not only is this like, and this is something that's very, I mean, look, everywhere across the world definitely has produced some dynamic leaders for sure. But the Caribbean, really, given its relative size, which, like, unless the Caribbean became a bloc, it's, you know, it's made up of small countries. And the way that the amount of incredible leader or dynamic leaders it's produced is stunning. And Mia Motley, man, I mean, she's incredibly impressive. And I know that Rihanna went out of her way to honor her. And one other thing that, like, I don't want to make a huge deal of, but to me, it's just very reflective. Like, there's an election going on in Canada right now. And the third, the sort of like Social Democratic Party, the New Democratic Party, is headed by this Sikh candidate named Jagmeet Singh. And I read his book actually, like, on a plane or something. And he's an interesting guy, and definitely, like, you know, the one that's putting the best stuff on the table, right? And he is actually, in fact, an extremely stylish. Like, he's very well dressed. He's very well put together. And she gave him the, like, super coveted Rihanna Instagram follow. But I just thought that was so like, she isn't going to follow Justin Trudeau. She's going to follow Jagmeet Singh because she actually clearly is following this stuff and reading about it. Like, she's, I don't know, man. She's like, she's impressive in a lot of domains in a way that is definitely unusual. So yes, I co-sign on the admiration.
So go check out Rihanna's latest Vogue profile. The second thing I want to highlight, a young artist out of Brooklyn, New York, Canarsie Section specifically, named Pop Smoke. He's like 20 years old. He has a song called Welcome to the Party that's bubbling. It's one of the biggest songs in New York. It's still a regional song right now. I don't know if it's going to pass New York, the New York scene, but it's killing New York right now, called Welcome to the Party. I encourage you to go watch that video. Super guerrilla style, just like in the neighborhood type of stuff, type of shit that I like. And he has another joint called Dior, which I think is a dope record as well. If you haven't familiarized yourself with Pop Smoke of Brooklyn, New York, Canarsie, Brooklyn, go check that out.
Awesome. I've been working I really like old, like, vintage sports stuff and how you can use it to kind of like figure out a place and a time. And I've been really enjoying the Diego Maradona documentary on HBO.
So fire.
It's an incredible documentary. And even for me, like, I respect and like soccer as a game. I actually played it as a kid and was decent at it. But I'm not, like, you know, I'm not at the bars watching the World Cup. You know, like, I'll catch a game, but I can watch long stretches of them that I think are totally boring. You know, like, I'm not going to lie about that. But watching, and obviously there are selected highlights, but watching his performance on the field is mind-blowing. The insight about the projection that you need to do as a celebrity combined with who you are as an individual and how that eats at you. The history of that time of Argentina playing, choosing to go and play in, you know, a very poor part of Italy around, you know, organized crime, but also bringing this huge pride to, in fact, a super racialized area inside an Italian context.
Mm-hmm.
the unparalleled, I mean, the footage, I mean, I actually felt bad for him as I was watching, because I was like, this guy never, like, he's just getting filmed. He's eating steak. He's getting filmed. He's practicing. He's getting filmed. He's playing tennis with his girlfriend. He's getting filmed, 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 filmed. Like, you know, I would snap at a certain point. But it's, yeah, man, it's fascinating. It's powerful. And the footage. And also, to me, like, I like that style. I like the Puma trainers. I like the, you know, the Italian energy. Not the, I mean, definitely
not the mob stuff, but yeah.
Not the calling people monkeys stuff.
Oh man, yo, take a bath. Oh my goodness.
God. But the cars, the energy, the shouting, the passion, and even places that are clearly on the periphery, like, it's beautiful. You know, the buildings are beautiful. The field are beautiful. I would definitely check that out if you can on HBO. That's an amazing documentary. So much to enjoy and learn with that. Everybody, leave us a review on iTunes. Click subscribe if you haven't yet. In the coming weeks, we will have more guests from the Count the Dings world, some other guests from the wider political and cultural world that we'll be pulling on as well. Please cop the Michael Brooks Show. If you haven't checked it out yet, go to the Michael Brooks Show on YouTube. We just crossed our first 80,000 subs, so thanks to everybody. Go and click subscribe. You can watch a full main show and a bunch of clips, get a flavor of all of the different things we're covering, and of course, get 4-to-1 extra content, get the whole thing, patreon.com/TMBS, and come see us in Philly. Waz, tell them all the ways they can connect.
Oh, of course, man. Big Waz on every single social media platform. If you haven't done that by now, that's BIGWOS. San Francisco sold out. I'm leaving for SF tomorrow. First time ever in my life I'm flying out of Burbank Airport, so I look forward to the experience. Bay Area, we're going to be in your ass. I look forward to seeing a bunch of the Count the Dings community on Thursday and Friday. And, of course, the big shebang Saturday night, man. We got guests lined up. It's a sold-out pack house. Going to be about something like 500 people in there. It's going to be crazy. I can't wait.
That sounds amazing. I want to thank each and every one of you. As always, we appreciate all of you listening. We love your feedback. We're open. Thank you, of course, to my partner, Big Waz. Thank you to great Rob Lopez. Thank you, Jade Hoy. Thank you to everybody in the Count the Dings team. Thank you to everybody on the TMBS team. We will see you, or I guess you'll hear us, next week.